It's all about providing value. You can't expect people to just trust your brand from seeing one ad. It's just not going to happen.
All right, it's time for another episode of Grow the Dream. Today, Andrew Torba with Automate Ads.
Learn how you can focus on creating the best possible content for your ads.
And get more money out of your efforts.
Yeah, lots of stuff about Twitter and Facebook ads and Google about his story.
Cool stuff.
You're going to like it.
All that and more right now.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when, you know, when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father. Not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
And welcome to episode 50 of Marketing Mondays.
Big 5-0.
So no Josh's jingle today?
No, absolutely not. And I just had one of these pills that has some caffeine and some other herbal
things. I saw you take a pill and I was a little concerned.
In it. I've got a lot to do today and need that extra push.
Yeah. So we're doing drugs now on top of
that's
the
good to know.
Herbal remedies.
Okay.
Caffeine.
Well, with caffeine.
Caffeine, I don't know.
I'm a trucker.
Caffeine's not technically an herb.
No, it's a drug.
Yeah. But it's not patentable, which is why there's not really good research on it. You know, it was discovered in the 1800s, and so nobody does really.
All I know
say
is that
nobody.
People who drink coffee live longer. That's the basic that I know.
There are,
and I cling to that.
I love how easy it is to derail you guys.
Well,
so what do you mean derail? When you say
we talk
derail,
about coffee at the beginning of every show. What are you talking about?
Oh, we're talking about coffee? I thought we were talking about drugs and herbal remedies.
No, I went right straight to coffee.
Well, caffeine is that. I mean, it's
speaking
actually
of.
Available in many natural, in plants,
right.
Many natural plants, naturally occurring plants.
Coffee beans.
But coffee is where obviously most of us U.S.-based people consume it. You know,
yes.
There's those Brits that drink tea, but yeah.
People in my household that do too. But
I started drinking tea while I read my science fiction books.
Oh, yeah. How's that going for you?
Great.
Have you...
So long and thanks for all the fish.
You figured out
that.
All right.
That's where I'm at. It's getting good.
I am looking forward to towel day this year. We're going to have some fun with that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, because...
42, anyone?
If you haven't read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, then you're going to be out of the loop on this.
Which...
Yeah, and we're just giving away a bunch, but you won't really know it until you read it.
Right. There's no good reason for us to even be talking
those
about
aren't
it. Except
spoilers. They don't make any sense.
Except that Josh is now reading them, so...
Right. Because we had to introduce the millennial.
All right, so episode 50, guys, our next show is going to be the one-year anniversary.
Nice.
The reason that it's not 52 or 53 is because we skipped a week or two somewhere in there and didn't publish a new episode.
What was wrong with us?
Yeah.
One was in the midst of the rebrand, and one was just a...
I don't actually care. I just wanted to say what was wrong with us.
Well, that's good.
I'm going to go with technical difficulties.
Okay, that sounds good. Me managing my schedule is definitely a technical difficulty. So, all right.
What's funny is how long we're talking without introducing our friend.
I was just about to say, I'm excited about our guest today. This is somebody that Josh, you have brought to our show.
Yes. I have contributed something to the show.
Oh.
His name is Andrew Torba with Automate Ads, and found out about his company a while back before they went through the name change. So we'll go through that. We're going to talk about Twitter. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff anyway. But
welcome to the show, Andrew.
Yeah.
Great to be here, guys. I'm excited to talk with you guys.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. So tell us, what is Automate Ads?
So Automate Ads really is a marketing automation platform. I think a lot of people assume that we're an ad tech company because we have the name ads in our title. But we're actually a marketing automation platform. And what we do is we help Facebook and Google advertisers automate a lot of the day-to-day management and optimization tasks that take a lot of their time. So things like creative A and B testing, managing budgets between ad sets and ad groups, programmatic bid optimization, ad rotation to prevent ad rot. And what we're trying to do is really simplify a lot of that nuanced, technical, day-to-day stuff that takes a lot of time and help advertisers focus on the most important part of marketing, which is the creative, the message, the targeting, the stuff that requires human creativity.
See, that's what we say a lot. That is the most important part.
You mean the content is? Is that what you're trying to say?
Absolutely. No, without a doubt. If you have a garbage image, garbage creative, off message, you're not going to convert.
Right. So it requires some strategy, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. I like that.
We like you already.
Do we want to just glaze over the fact that he like dropped a bunch of terms that
I'm not even
100%. Okay. A-B testing. We talked about that. We had an episode with a guy. Okay.
Yeah, we talked about conversion rate optimization.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So wider funnel. Chris
he
Gower
does that
for ads.
Yeah, which is cool. Programmatic bid optimization.
This one's a little bit more technical.
So don't you just throw a budget at Facebook ads and just say, hey, you know, optimize my bid for me? Doesn't Facebook do that for us?
Well, not necessarily, because the market is constantly in flux. And the person that actually makes the bid change the fastest is going to actually win. So what we've built is actually it's called a neural network. It's a form of machine learning. And what the system can do is actually predict major market changes at the bid level about 10 to 15 minutes before they actually happen. So think of it as like a giant computer brain that is built to do one thing all day, and that's optimize your bids for your Facebook and Google ad campaigns.
Have you given this a name like Watson?
We just call it an intelligence system because that's really what it is. The more data that it feeds through itself, the more it learns and the better that it gets and the more accurate that it gets. And right now it helps our advertisers perform in the top, you know, anywhere from 70 to 99% of ad sets or ad groups in their target market.
So that just justified the $35 I pay a month.
So if we shouldn't call it Watson, should we call it Skynet?
Yeah, there you go.
Not necessarily.
Not yet.
Listen, this is a really big fear. This is a really big thing that a lot of advertisers kind of fear, is they're afraid that almost our system is going to replace their job. And I always tell advertisers, like, listen, it still requires strategy. It still requires creative. It still requires all of the components that really make a marketer a marketer. Mm. Because sitting in ads dashboards all day, doing nuanced things like creating new ads or rotating them or, you know, changing bids, like, this is not marketing. This is above your pay grade as a marketer. I want to take you back to what you're really good at, which is the strategy, the creative side of things, the copy, all the stuff that really makes marketing marketing.
I think you mean below your pay grade.
Yes, below your pay grade.
There you okay, go. I was confused. Okay, so
sorry about that.
No. That's all right.
We should let everybody know. Well, early for Andrew.
Yeah,
he's in San Francisco West Coast time.
Yeah, he's 3 hours behind us.
So he gets a little slack cut to him here.
I just finished my first coffee.
Okay, that's okay.
See, I've already finished my first French press, not to the second. So.
Notice how I said first, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because life requires more than that.
One of many.
Yeah, I'm working on reaching my target heart rate for the day, too, so it's okay. with you and this, I think some of the stuff that you just described, like spending a lot of time in ad interfaces, when I think about somebody that maybe a small business advertiser, or maybe a startup, maybe somebody that's really just kind of trying to use as much available. Yeah, they're wearing a lot of hats. I don't know if people even understand that there might be some benefit to spending a lot of time in there. I mean, what kind of things could you accomplish if you watched all of that a lot more closely than perhaps some people do?
No, without a doubt. I think, you know, when Facebook advertisers, especially even AdWords advertisers, when you first start advertising online, the first 6 to 12 months is really a learning curve, a massive learning curve. And over time, you start spending money and spending it in different ways and learning different things and reading and listening to podcasts like this to get tips.
Amen.
And over time, you start to learn that, like, oh, wait, this is something that takes a lot of my time. So you come to this crossroads and you either have to hire someone in-house to do it full time, or you have to outsource it to an agency or to a consultant, or find some kind of software like us to help you manage and scale it. So that's really the problem that we kind of saw in the market. Like, there are no problems with campaign creation. Most businesses don't have any problems like creating a Facebook ad and letting it slide or letting it run. But the problem comes, you know, everything that comes after creation. So the day-to-day management, the optimization, you know, the ad rotation, all these things kind of add up and improve your performance drastically if done the right way.
Why doesn't Facebook just automate this stuff for businesses?
Yeah, so a lot of it they do, but the problem with Facebook is that they have to be a platform. So they have to create a system that works for every sized advertiser, whether it's the small business that's spending $100 a month or Samsung or, you know, Microsoft that's spending, you know, tens of millions a month. It has to work for everybody. And also the majority of their revenue is coming from partners like us. I think it's about 65% is coming from their marketing
agencies.
Partners. Yeah. Yeah. Marketing partners that either manage spend for people or have software like us that helps people manage their spend. So that's really where the majority of their revenue is. And they have to treat that ecosystem essentially with respect. And they have every incentive to as well, because we help out a lot.
So what you're saying is they're slightly better optimized for the bigger spenders.
Not necessarily, because, you know, it becomes more difficult to optimize as you kind of scale up, especially if you have smaller demographics, and you have to get really creative with how you're targeting, who you're targeting, a bunch of different messages. There are some, bigger brands that have thousands of campaigns running at any given time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is insane to think about, right?
It really is. Yeah.
It takes an entire team of like 20 people to manage these campaigns every day. Like, it's that level. It's crazy.
Okay. So I'm curious about the bid optimization strategy, because from the basic value standpoint of using your product, you're helping people save money, get better pricing on their ads, keeping ad rot from happening, which also saves them money and keeps their relevance score high.
Yep.
Correct me if I'm saying anything incorrect, but
no, this is all right. Yeah.
Where was I going with that?
Yeah. So can you give us like a real world, for instance, like what would happen if somebody just turned on an ad? Let's say they picked out all the demographics and the other data, and they said, okay, I'm going to let this run for a month.
Sure. So what will happen if you create, let's say, a campaign with two ad sets, and we start on Facebook, and we start them off with, say, $10 a day each.
And for people that don't know, and the ad set level is where you actually do all your targeting work and your main budgeting, right?
Yes. So you'll say, I want to target males 18 to 25 in San Francisco, and the other ad set is going to be, say, females 18 to 25 in San Francisco. Each of those will have a $10 a day budget. And then inside of the ad sets is where you're actually going to create the ads, or what people actually see. The visual component, the creative side of things. So inside of those ad sets, let's say that you have, 10 different images that you want to test out as ads. What Facebook will do is they will choose two or three of those ads almost at random and give a very little amount of your daily spend or your budget for the entirety of the campaign to any of those other seven or eight creatives. And then on top of that, your budget will not move unless you manually move it. Your bid price will not move unless you manually change it. So what our system's doing is we're managing the budget between those two ad sets for you. So let's say that ad set one, the male target, is outperforming the female target drastically. We'll start to shift the budget from ad set two into ad set one automatically for you with no extra work from you. And then inside of those ad sets where those ads are now not getting any spend and not getting a chance to actually perform, we're going to rotate all 10 of those between both of those ad sets to test every single creative that you provide and give it a statistically significant chance to actually perform. Because really where the major differences in performance come heavily is on the creative side. So having the right creative and making sure that you're testing all the creatives, and A/B testing especially, and not just running with like one creative, is crucially important. Crucially important. So our system will do that for you. And then on top of that, those 10 ads that you've created, if you were just running a normal Facebook ad, they won't change at all. They will just stay the same. And what will happen over time is when you leave them running for a long period of time, the campaign tends to see what's called ad rot or ad fatigue. So performance will start to slump after, it could be anywhere from a few days to a few weeks, depending on your target market. But what we'll do is our system will create a fresh version of those top performing ads after we do the A/B testing and figure out which ads are the top performers. We'll throw those into an ad rotation to help prevent this ad rot from happening. And a lot of this stuff, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. Most people don't know that they should be doing these things. And they tend to learn it much, further down the line after they've been advertising for at least a year or so. Some pick it up sooner, and that's the sooner the better. A lot of people don't segment. I know a lot of advertisers that are only using boosted posts, for example, which are not really a solid, sophisticated campaign. You're basically placing all of your bets on one target market with one creative. Whereas
we call that the easy button.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's like the convenience store. You can get your milk there, but you're probably going to pay a lot more for it than you should.
Exactly. Exactly. And what it's meant to be is it's meant to be a quick start, a quick jump into Facebook advertising. It's meant to be like your first few campaigns. But once, you know, as you start scaling this and you start, you know, figuring things out, you realize that there's a lot more to this. And if you do it the right way, you know, you can get much better results.
So what I hear is that the promote button is sort of like the drug dealer on the street that gives you just a little bit
yes,
of the easy
example.
Just to get
yeah.
you started
yes.
and all, and then hooks
yes.
you.
Yes, exactly. That's a great metaphor.
I hear that Facebook is about to release another drop against organic reach of pages.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. I mean, really, they're heavily making a shift towards paid, and paid is quickly becoming the center of the entire marketing funnel. You know, and I think a lot of people take for granted and they see, you know, Facebook as maybe a top of the funnel system. But if done correctly, if you have, you know, custom audience pixels set up on your website where you can do retargeting, you can do audience building, you can really set up the entire funnel from top to bottom.
Hey, so can you explain that? So for somebody that might not understand what you just mean, like what the top of the funnel versus somewhere in the middle of the funnel, how do you mean that we could use ads to work with people in different stages?
Sure. So Facebook has a lot of different ad types, right? And one of those is a website click campaign. Website click campaign has the basic objective of driving clicks back to your website. That's what you're paying for. And that is really a great example of a top of the funnel campaign. You're targeting people that haven't seen your website before. It's trying to create awareness, brand awareness, get people back to the website to learn more about your brand. Once they get to the website, what you can do is install a custom audience pixel on your site and then actually capture their information through cookies in their browser and retarget them with ads later on. So people that have come to your website, have checked it out, have learned about your brand a little bit, obviously have some sort of interest in what it is that you do. And what you can do then, using that same pixel, is set it to fire on a conversion event, such as an add to cart or a checkout or a sign up. And then you can go back to Facebook and create what's called a web conversion campaign. So the web conversion campaign has the objective of specifically paying for individual conversions. And those conversions are tied to that pixel that you've installed on your site. So what you're going to do is retarget the people that have already come through your site with a more tailored or a more direct message. A lot of people like to do discount codes, for example, or you know, some sort of value add on the retargeting side of things. That, at least that's what I recommend, without being too pushy, because you also want to be careful that you're not targeting people that have already bought something, unless you have like a reoccurring service or a product that can be bought multiple times. But you don't want to target people that are already your customers, essentially, in some cases. So for that, Facebook has what's called an exclusion audience, where you can exclude a certain audience of, say, emails that are people that have already bought something, so that they don't see those retargeting ads. And that's really important, because you don't want to annoy people that are already customers, or that have already paid you in situations where it doesn't make sense.
Fantastic. So in other words, you know, one version of the ad might be just to get new people into
yes.
your funnel, and another maybe or perhaps multiple versions of your ads might push people along.
Here's exactly. here's how we use it. We actually use it, and some of our listeners will know this. We use it to promote blog posts that
absolutely.
Actually, a lot of times these are blog posts that you're creating, David. You
hey,
and your
thank
team.
You. Yeah, my team does good writing, doesn't it?
Yes.
They? Yeah.
So then we take that and we'll do like a boosted post for it, but not use the boost post button. We'll use automated ads. So it's not a click campaign.
It's a page post engagement.
Yeah, it's a page post engagement, but it serves the same purpose. It's top
yep.
of the funnel. You know, hey, here's a blog post, check it out.
Yep.
And then of course we have that pixel on the site, so that then we can target them down the road with a different ad. So that's how we use it.
That's absolutely one of the strategies that we use, and that's something that I recommend as well, is using your blog to drive and collect top of the funnel data. So you're providing value to people in the content that you're providing, promoting that content, getting people to come back, check out that content, and then capturing their information to retarget them with your service or product later on.
Yeah, well, I think if fills a really important issue and a problem people have is that they write all this content, they have their personas in mind, they know who they're writing to, they create it, they publish the post, and four people read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, they go publish it on their Facebook page, and either they don't have enough likes, or the likes they got on their Facebook page don't matter.
Or Facebook keeps slapping them.
Yeah. Or it's mom. And, you know, I appreciate mom reading that content, but, you know.
Mom, please stop commenting. It just negates the whole.
We have the same last name.
Seriously.
Quit leaving me reviews.
Yeah, so I love that this can help you, you know, if you know that target persona for that blog post that you've created, you can actually go out and find those people, whether they're in your local demographic area or they're people that have liked certain pages or like a certain technology or have a certain, you know, spending habit, whatever it is, you can go target those people and say, hey, I wrote this blog post for you. And absolutely. Instead of the ad looking like, hey, buy this from me, the ad looks like, hey, I wrote something for you and it's going to help you. So I like
it. It's all about providing value, really. I think that's one of the biggest things that, especially when businesses are first getting started, that they don't really understand. They want to push sales, 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 sales. And it's like, well, you have to, you know, first of all, create a funnel, have some sort of strategy, and then also provide value to people, right? Like, you can't expect people to just trust your brand from seeing one ad. It's just not going to happen. So you need to be persistent. You need to have patience, because the whole thing is like one giant science experiment, right? Like, seriously, like we could sit here and we can, you know, try to give people tips and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, each individual brand is going to have a very unique experience based on how they're targeting, what their creatives are, what their message is, what their strategy is. There's so many different contextual items that go into play, you know, when you're actually running ads on the internet.
So, Andrew, I'm curious on just a step away from the technical for a moment to the business side. How do you create your expense structure? How do people pay for it? I mean, is it based on a couple of thoughts here? Questions, I should say. Is it based on the cost of the ads, the volume of the ads? How do you price it for companies and
it's
all?
Based on your budget per month.
Yeah. Okay. And then how? Oh, that's right. You would know, Josh. And then and how did you arrive at a method that works for you, assuming it is working for you and you've arrived at it?
Yeah, good question.
It might be actually in flux because young companies often are trying to find that absolutely. Right price point. How have you been trying to locate that price point in the market?
Sure. I would say this is by far one of the most difficult aspects of starting a business, especially a software business, right? One of the things that we saw in the industry is that most of the technology that comes close to even doing what we're doing is in the enterprise space alone. So there's zero option for small and mid-market advertisers. And what we wanted to do is build a model that made sense, that scales with your ad spend budget. So if you're a startup like us and, you know, say right now you're spending 10 grand a month on ads or even 2 grand a month on ads, and you go out and you raise a Series A, and now you're spending, you know, $25,000 a month on ads. Well, we wanted a model that would scale with the businesses that are using our system. So what we came up with is the ability to scale based on budget. And it's a flat fee. It's a SaaS model. So, for example, it starts at $50 a month. And for that, you could spend up to $5,000 a month across all of the ads accounts that are connected to our dashboard. And it just scales up from there. And, you know, the other option that we've tried in the past is a percentage of spend model. So in the past we had, you know, it was like 5% of any ad spend that you run through the system. And for most people, they didn't like this because it was unpredictable, because their ad spend budgets would fluctuate and they didn't necessarily know how much they would end up spending at the end of the month. And they just wanted to know what they'd be paying every month. So the flat model has worked much, much better for us since we've made the transition. And we actually made that pricing transition as a part of our rebrand as well.
I was curious about that. I wondered if your old brand was Cocoon, and maybe you can go into that a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm super curious. How does one get into this is the ad tech space, but what in your experience in the past made you decide, hey, there's a need here that I want to fill, and tell us how it got started.
Yeah. So, I co-founded the company with, one of my best friends. We grew up together. We've been best friends since the 8th grade. We co-founded the company in 2011, originally as an agency, a paid media agency when we were in college. And we scaled that up to about 10 person team. And realized quickly that we were going to have trouble scaling it beyond that. It's very, very difficult to scale that type of business. So we started having a lot of problems ourselves and wanted to solve them with technology. We started learning all of these things that we need to do, like the A/B testing, the ad rotation, the bid optimization. We started learning that we needed to do all of these things with the clients that we were working with, and we wanted to build a technology to literally automate what we were doing. So we took what we were doing manually and built the technology that now is Automate Ads around that to do it for us automatically. We applied to Y Combinator. You know, when we started making the transition away from being an agency into a technology company, and got accepted into their winter 2015 batch. Moved out to the Bay about, it's actually a year ago this month. And, you know, here we are. So it's been a wild ride.
Wow. Did the rebrand happen before Y Combinator? Was it
No,
during?
It actually happened after. No, it happened after. So Cocoon, just as a little bit of background, was the name of the agency.
You should say how to spell that, because it's not how people would expect.
Well, first of all, the regular way to spell it is confusing to a lot of people.
Truly.
But it's the way that we spelled it is K-U-H-C-O-O-N, and that's purely because there was a domain spotter, squatter on the main the main normal way to spell it.
So when you what drove the decision to rebrand? I'm curious.
Well, for one, it's very, very difficult to kind of spell and remember and make it stick in your head. And for number two, I typed in automateads.com and it was available for $11.99. I almost fell out of my bed.
I'm kind of shocked.
It was one
by
in
that
the morning.
Too.
I'll never forget. It was one in the morning. And like, we had knew that we wanted to rebrand. So many people had told us, like, you guys need a different name. And I'm like, okay, what is it that this system does? Like, what is our core value? And I'm like, we automate ads. And I typed it in and it was like available. And I'm like, oh man, this is it.
That is crazy.
I go to Twitter, the handle's available. I'm like, this is a sign from God. This is the rebrand. This needs to happen. And we made it happen in 6 weeks.
Wow.
Well, I think Automate Ads works really a lot better than Cocoon spelled weird.
Yes,
definitely. Probably.
Well, the thing is that Cocoon worked really well as an agency because it was creative and different and, I don't know, kind of unique in a way. It actually did work on that front, but when you have people searching for products like what we have, it doesn't work too well.
Right. So with Y Combinator, I mean, for those that are not Silicon Valley familiar.
And people are like, what's a Series A?
Yeah. Okay. So talk about Y Combinator and what it is and what that experience has been like for you guys.
Sure. So Y Combinator is a seed stage accelerator. And basically what they do is they invest.
Okay, wait. I'm sorry, Andrew. So I'm the boomer. I'm the boomer here. So you got to back up on that. When you got to explain your explanation now.
Have you been to Silicon Valley, Rod? Just curious.
Actually, I've been through it, I guess, a number of years ago.
It's like an incubator or an accelerator for early stage startups.
All right. Okay. We know what that is.
Okay. Got you then.
I was following. But this is entertaining.
It's funny because I was thinking too technical then.
And I would argue that it is one of the first and one of the best by a landslide. I'm obviously biased, but they just hit their 10th year in motion here. And obviously a bunch of other accelerators have popped up since then. But my experience through YC, I mean, really, they're like a family to me. And they were so helpful, and getting in was just, changed our trajectory dramatically. And it really changed our lives. And it empowered us to, move out to the Valley. It empowered us to get a ton of customers. Obviously, every company that went through Y Combinator is an early stage startup. Every early stage startup is running Facebook and Google ads.
Right.
So it worked out really, really well to have a solid customer base of classmates that were around us.
Oh, that's sweet.
With other companies.
Hey, so when you say that they like you moved out to the Bay Area, do they take you through like a structured program, or do you work with mentors, or like how does
Sure. So the way it works is we meet as a group. So there's a batch, and there's two batches a year. There's a winter batch and there's a summer batch. And in the last two batches, there's been 100 companies in each batch.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
It's huge.
It's really big. So every Tuesday, all 100 of those companies meet up for a dinner. And the dinners will be great to network with everybody, obviously, in the group, number one, because that's a lot of people. Have dinner together, pitch companies, get advice, all that type of stuff. And then they'll have a speaker come in. And the speaker is always somebody big. It's like a Mark Zuckerberg or, a billionaire investor or, anybody that has been through the program that is now a big company. So, like, the CEO of Airbnb, as an example, So
do they ever bring failed companies in? Just curious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can learn from failed companies.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, there's been so many failures that have gone on to do other things, and that's part of it too.
Yep.
Part of those bigger guys is like, they tell the stories of like their past failures and stuff, like inside stuff that like normally wouldn't be publicized. And, it's just like a very personal environment. And, outside of that, we also have group partners. So there are, I believe at this point, oh man, I don't even know, 20 plus YC partners. And each group would be kind of segmented out, and there'd be like 20 companies in each group, and it would be based on what type of company you are. So if you're a SaaS company, an enterprise company, mechanical company, there's so many different things. A hardware company, rather, not mechanical. I don't know what I'm saying here. I need another coffee.
Because they're all tech related, right? I mean, this is
Yeah. They're primarily tech related, but they're also getting into like nonprofits now and kind of branching out more into hardware. And more into, you know, other verticals outside of just purely tech. But originally it had started as purely tech.
So I think this is part of the appeal of Silicon Valley, if you're in the tech space at all, is just that you have stuff like this,
right?
You know, where this is a group of, first of all, I'm shocked that it's only 10 years old. I've been hearing about Y Combinator for what seems like forever, you know. So when you said it was 10 years old, I'm like, wow, that's pretty recent, actually.
When I think of Y Combinator, I just picture orange.
Yes,
their branding is very
and there's
simple.
Your branding, yes.
Yeah, so and you know, entrepreneurs and people that start businesses outside of Silicon Valley and that are not necessarily in the tech space, it's a lot harder for us to find stuff like this.
Well, here's the thing about Y Combinator is that you don't actually have to move here. You don't have to live here. That's not a part of the conditions. You do for the batch. So for a minimum of 3 months, 90 days, you have to be in the Valley, right, for the whole batch process, because you're going to get a lot of mentorship. You're going to be able to meet with a lot of people that have been very, very successful in your space and get a ton of great feedback on your product. All these things are really important. And then obviously the culmination of all of this, of this 3 months, is a demo day. And the demo day is in front of like 1,000 top investors from the Valley and from all over the world, really, who fly in for demo day. And then after that, you know, you potentially raise your round, which is what we did. We raised our round right after demo day. And then you keep growing and scaling from there is the idea. And then after your batch is over, you can still have like office hours with the partners, and a lot of us, you know, want to give back, because a lot of the other alumni have helped us get to where we have become. So it's like a brotherhood in a way, or a family, in that we all want to give back to and help everybody that's in the ecosystem. So that's one of the greatest things.
And this is like not just any family. I mean, we're talking about
a really large
companies
family.
Like Dropbox, Reddit, Airbnb. In other words, these are brands and names that people know, even outside the Valley. I mean, you're talking about
Reddit must have been an early one.
They were the first.
Oh, okay. The first.
Yeah. Wow. I would have thought more than 10 years for Reddit.
And you know, billions and billions of page views on their website since then.
They basically invented the internet as
it is. Is that it? Okay.
It was Al Gore and Reddit.
Yeah. And Reddit together.
And Reddit, yeah.
No, not Al Gore, just Reddit. And cats.
And cats, yes. Bacon. And bacon.
Well, actually, it's funny. Alexis is actually one of the reasons that I got into YC, because he had recommended that I apply. Actually, 2 years before we did, and I finally listened to him 2 years later and applied, and that's when we got in.
And you're talking about Reddit founder Alexis Ohanian, right?
You got in the first time you applied. Most people apply several times.
Yes. And actually, we applied late as well, so the deadline.
Yeah, but you had a bit of an in. It sounds
if you know the founder of Reddit,
no,
that might help.
No, it really wasn't though. Like, I'm not like best friends with Alexis, but I am pretty close with him. And we had a great product, and we had revenue, and we had customers, and that's really what got us in.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, okay, because a lot of this stuff is like unproven, untested, just, hey, we got an idea.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of it is like super early, like idea stage, and like we already had customers, we had a couple investors, we had, you know, a very solid product. So we had a lot of traction, and I think that's firmly why I believe we got in.
Traction. It's a good word.
Okay, so they helped you. How did Demo Day go?
Demo Day was great. It was one of the best days of my life, one of the most exciting days. You know, you're up on stage. Ashton Kutcher is in, you know, the front row because he's a tech investor. And then you have a room full of, you know, about 1,000 people or so that are the top investors in the world. And you get to pitch your company and pitch your idea and pitch your vision in 2 minutes in front of these people.
Whoa, 2 minutes.
2 minutes. You have 2 minutes, yeah. Which is...
It's a long elevator ride pitch.
It's almost like a tweet, right? It's like...
Yeah, right?
It's like fit your pitch into a tweet.
Can you, if we asked you to, could you do it right on the spot? Like, do you have it memorized?
It's recorded on YouTube if you want to check it out.
Well, no, I'm just wondering if you still remember.
I don't remember it word for word. This was almost a year ago.
We're wondering about your chops, man. We're not looking to see what you did.
Also, we're you know, much further along, much more developed, and
so you would pitch it differently now, huh? Yeah.
I mean, even if you look at the video, it's on YouTube. Like, that's, I pitched the 5% of spend model that we were just talking about in the video. So things are a little bit differently, obviously, at this point. It's like 9 or 10 months later.
It's crazy.
We'll link out to your pitch on YouTube for our listeners to check it out.
Yeah, if they want to buy into it.
Yeah.
So,
and that's actually with the Cocoon brand as well, still, too. So,
oh, fun.
Old school.
So back to your product. I want to talk. I'm curious. So Facebook, I feel like we've been down that road a billion times. Everybody know it works. There's pretty good targeting in there. There's so much you can learn. What I've found and had really a lot of trouble with, do you guys have Twitter launched on your platform yet first?
So we have it in beta right now. And okay. We have a limited number of access tokens. So basically the way that their onboarding process works for getting the ads API.
Typical Twitter.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a nightmare, but it's in the works right now.
Gotcha. I'm just curious because I've had the worst trouble with Twitter getting any kind of results. I mean, you know, you spend, you know, $15 and they're like, oh, hey, you got a retweet and a couple of people clicked on the link. I mean, are they manually inflating the bids on these things or like what is going on? Because I just don't see the market for it. I don't understand if anybody's actually getting results from Twitter.
It's tough. I think a lot of the bigger brands are mainly the ones that are kind of driving the growth and driving the results at scale anyway.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, Facebook has 2.5 million advertisers. Twitter only has 100,000 total worldwide.
Wow.
It is a lot smaller period.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And on average, I believe I read this somewhere, Twitter ads are 15 to 18% more expensive just on average versus like Facebook or anywhere else. So I think that they have a lot of work to do. And what they're trying to move towards now is becoming sort of a pseudo display network in a way. What they're trying to do is monetize the traffic that is off of Twitter itself. So tweets that are, you know, in timelines on the side of websites, for example, like baking ads in there. You know, other ways that they're trying to monetize the eyeballs that they have and the reach that they have primarily off of Twitter. So I think they have some challenges for sure. Right now, I think the benefit of the win on Twitter is coming at the enterprise level from what I've seen.
So, well, I was just wondering if, and you might have just answered it as I was about to ask it there, but is it possible that the bigger users and advertisers on Twitter are using it more as a branding vehicle?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's more of a brand advertising network right now. Mm-hmm. I think there are clear signs that they're making the transition and trying to, you know, get stronger on the direct response side of advertising. But for right now, it's definitely heavily used for the branded advertising side of things. Absolutely.
I'm just very curious to see like how, because I've had major trouble with their platform, just being completely honest and getting any sort of results. I mean, for me, it's a small marketing spend for around a specific event, and I'm trying to drive awareness around, you know, basically a launch and trying to get, you know, picked up by influencers. But it's like I spend $15 and it doesn't get shown to the right people. And I know you have to spend, you know, more than that. Is your platform going to fix that for me?
So we are going to help on the optimization side of things for sure, without a doubt, because there's a lot of wiggle room for improvement, especially on Twitter's side, because even their bid system and stuff is not as advanced as Facebook's. But where most advertisers are seeing success and where Twitter's strength is right now is with targeting the followers of specific users. So I think that is very strong in terms of capturing a very specific audience. But the other issue is that there's a lot of fake profiles, there's a lot of bots, there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to, are these clicks actually going through? Are they real? Like, and that's not limited to only Twitter, in all fairness.
Sure, I mean, yeah.
That's definitely not limited to them, but I think that they definitely have a lot of work to do. What I'm more excited about is Snapchat. What I'm more excited about is Pinterest.
Mm-hmm. Pinterest. I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, Pinterest is going to be huge, but only in specific verticals, because I think, how do you sell a car through Pinterest ads?
No. No, but shoes might sell.
You show off those gull wings.
Or how do you sell, like, signing up for a bank through Pinterest ads, right? So it's like, it's a little bit of a different, you know, medium.
Yeah.
I think that e-commerce businesses will do really well. I think that fashion businesses will do really well. You know, all the obvious verticals that make sense for Pinterest's core demographic. You know, I don't know about you guys. I actually do not use Pinterest.
Oh, we've had this discussion.
Yeah.
All of us, I think our wives are use Pinterest a fair yep. bit, and we don't. And that's the demographic.
My mom uses yep. Pinterest. My sister, everybody, every woman in my life is on Pinterest. But
right.
I have one. I just do not use it.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I have been running ads, though. And, you know, it's tough because we're obviously a B2B software company that targets specifically like Facebook and Google advertisers. Trying to find those people on Pinterest is not the easiest.
Well, I would say in the same way that startup folk and people in tech are on Twitter, the opposite is true seemingly on Pinterest.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, if you look at some of their early stages of growth, they majority actually was like the Midwestern United States that drove their early growth.
I believe it.
Interesting.
Makes sense.
So with your advertisers, in other words, your customers, people using your platform, do you have any feel for the mix? Like how much of what they're doing is on Google with you know, the various
sure.
ad options there versus the other ones?
Yeah, Google is definitely heavier at this point.
Oh, really?
Heavier. Oh, no, definitely by far. I mean, Google last year, I believe it was $63 million in ad dollars. And then Facebook was at, I believe, 14, 15, somewhere around there. So they're catching up very quickly, but Google definitely still has the majority of ad spend right now.
And I'm talking about your customers, right? Is that what?
That matches with us as well. I think we're actually more heavily weighted on the Facebook side because we originally had started with that.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then we moved into you know, Google after you know the Facebook, and Facebook is really where we started and where our specialization is by a landslide for sure in terms of customers.
Do you help advertisers that might be familiar, say, with targeting and using, you know, Facebook to reach people to also find the same audience on Google with their Google ad efforts? Is there a way that your system helps with that?
I mean, the targeting is both very different, but
sure.
That's something that we're moving towards with our new tracking system.
That's right. You have a new Pixel, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to actually have our own Pixel, that Pixel that I described earlier from Facebook. We're going to actually have our own. And what we're going to be able to do is track
Sweet.
Every single user that comes through your website or through your mobile app, and then track every move that they make down your funnel with custom-based events. So you can visualize that funnel. You can see where the drop-off is actually happening. You can overlay the performance of your ad campaigns against the actual results of people moving down the funnel on your site. And then the final biggest piece, which is where I was going with this, is audience creation. So automatically creating audiences based on where people land in the funnel. For example, automatically create a custom audience of people that have landed or have added something to cart but didn't complete the purchase, as an example. Retarget them with this campaign on Facebook with a conversion campaign, as an example. And the conversion event is this specific key event, i.e. a purchase. So that's kind of where we're going. And audience management is going to be probably one of the biggest emerging things going forward. In 2016, because it's such a big part of driving success, especially with Facebook ads, and Twitter's moving in this direction. Google has also moved in this direction. And it's a part of capturing that end of the funnel versus just, you know, your standard top of the funnel website click-esque campaign.
So I'm going to ask what is probably an obvious question. Do you guys have an API?
We do not, only not yet, and only because there are certain restrictions with us having access to the Facebook Ads API that like we can't just make that publicly available to everybody.
Sure.
So we're trying to figure out what those restrictions are and how it could kind of be reflected in our own type of API. But yes, that is something that we do have in the works.
Because I'm like envisioning a dream scenario where I have a CRM that I'm tracking like other efforts like such as email opt-ins and other things like that, where we already try to visualize the funnel and various progressions through that. And then, boy, wouldn't it be a dream if that managed to talk to your audience management?
Well, it will actually talk to our tracking system. So our tracking system will pull in things like UTMs. And that's actually how we're aligning campaigns across the funnel data that we're also collecting and user data that we're collecting. And the user data will go right into creating custom audiences on Facebook, creating custom audiences on Google, et cetera. So things that right now are manual process. You have to export that data, upload that data to Facebook, they'll match it, and then you can finally create a campaign and target that audience.
Boy, it sounds like it's getting more and more fun all the time.
APIs are eating the
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really what we're trying to do. It's just automate a lot of this nuanced stuff that most people right now need to do manually or don't know that they need to be doing and are missing out on getting better results. So that's really what we're trying to do.
Fantastic.
It's powerful stuff. I really love using your product. Yeah. I mean, just being honest.
It sounds like, too, as it becomes more complicated, as it becomes more involved, and as it becomes more important to be able to effectively target ads and all, software such as this actually will become, at some point, probably a critical component to any marketing program. I'm sure you hope that, Andrew.
Yeah, that's the plan here. I think we're super early, and we're doing something. And that's actually sometimes a problem. Being sure. one of the first to market is actually difficult with such a new idea.
I was going to ask, is there any competition that, because I don't know of any.
I mean, listen, there are a ton of ad dashboards out there, but what we're trying to position ourselves as is like not an ads dashboard, but a marketing automation tool. So basically like the HubSpot for paid media advertising.
Oh, okay.
Or the Hootsuite for paid media advertising. You know, managing them all in one spot and then automating and attributing, all of the data in one spot as well.
Yeah, because I think even smaller businesses that might not spend a lot of time on this stuff are realizing just how important it is to have multiple touches.
Oh, yes. Multiple channels. Yep.
Yeah, it's very hard these days to attribute a sale, for example, and even an e-commerce sale or an opt-in for that matter to one thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, people at checkout, when you ask them, how did you find us? Oh, the internet, or Google.
No, yep.
You
didn't.
Well, asking people is always the least reliable thing you can do, right?
Tracking is the best way.
Well, particularly for local businesses, it's like, what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, you don't have it. They don't check out online.
Yep. And that's the biggest biggest problem in all of advertising right now is attribution. And that's one of the things that we're trying to solve with the new tracking system that will be coming out here in a few weeks.
Well, that's fun. You know, it's like we're back in the day of the famous ad quote, right, that said, 50% of my advertising produces 100% of my sales. Mm-hmm. The problem is I just don't know which half it is.
Yeah.
It's with all of this tracking, it's amazing to me that we're somehow back in the same soup.
Right.
Yeah.
How did we get back here?
A moving target all the time.
Yeah. Well, and with increasing channels like this, where you have to think not just one strategy, not just Google, not just, SEO strategy, not just AdWords, pay-per-click, Facebook, Pinterest, I mean, and all the new entrants, you have to have something to kind of unify it, or ideally you want something or you're going to go crazy.
Yeah. So I think that's the moving target part. And probably, if anything, what we're learning is that this will always be the case, because technology will keep advancing, opportunities will keep opening up, and then there will be technology entrepreneurs like Andrew here who will be coming up with ways to try and make that more effective and automate things, make it better for the users. Meanwhile, the target is still moving down the road to the next piece.
Well, the internet gets more and more fragmented, and the way people use it.
And that's another element. Sure.
Yeah. And I blame it on Y Combinator and people like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's all your fault. It's Silicon Valley.
By the way, that quote that you said, that was by John Wanamaker back in the 1800s. He was a U.S. Postmaster General and an early marketing pioneer, and he said that almost 100 years ago at this point, and it still holds true today, which is really cool.
That's funny, because the first time I heard it was attributed to somebody in the mid 20th century.
Yes, so. It's often falsely attributed to someone in advertising.
Yeah,
in the 60s, I believe.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's the Madman era.
Mad
yeah, but in that era, and that's who I thought it was attributed to. So that's interesting, John Wanamaker. Now you've given me a research project.
This is good.
Yeah, from Pennsylvania as well, which as well as that's what I'm from. He's from Philly.
A regular font of trivia here, Andrew.
I love it. I'm just happy that it's something that David didn't know.
It's true. I had no idea.
But he did know the one from recent.
There are a lot of things that I have studied with respect to advertising and this kind of stuff, and so that's I'm glad you did that. I'm gonna enjoy looking this guy up, John Wanamaker.
Well, I've actually written on it before, and I've made the mistake of the false attribution.
Oh, and they'll get caught.
the internet quickly corrected me.
Yeah.
So that's how I learned my lesson the hard way.
Well, that's what it's like what Abraham Lincoln said. You know, you just can't trust everything you read on the internet.
Ba-doom, exactly. Boom. Which is on the internet.
Anyway, well, this is a lot of fun. I'm excited to test out your system. So where would someone go if they wanted to find out more or get started?
Enter your funnel at the top.
AutomateAds.com. Very simple.
All right.
It's amazing that was available.
Should someone expect to be retargeted with ads in Facebook after one does that?
Yes. They should. Absolutely.
If you're doing it right, they should be.
So that's how the free trial works. You just go to their website and then do nothing.
And it'll follow you.
That's right. Oh, there's a coupon.
Then you get to experience the whole process and see how it works.
That's a pretty good point. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's what AWeber used to do. The autoresponder email service provider, their free trial, they called it a free trial. What you did is you put your name and your email address in, and then they just bombarded you and said, "Hey, wouldn't you like to be able to do this too?"
Yeah.
I mean, I'm oversimplifying. Sure. It was more sophisticated than that, but that's how it worked.
That's
really cool.
Yeah,
it was
your
really,
brand here.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Picture if you had this level of automated follow up with your potential customers. So that was fun stuff. So what's the biggest thing that has changed about your life since moving, aside from the business side of it, since moving to the Valley?
Well, I'm so used to East Coast weather. Right now, I'm not sure what the East Coast weather is. It's probably like 5 to 18 degrees somewhere in between there and snowing.
Well, there's a hurricane in the Atlantic, just for fun.
There's the East Coast Florida. Then there's the East Coast you're talking about.
Yeah. The East Coast I'm talking about has like a ton of snow.
Right.
And like negative wind chill,
degree
temperature.
Yeah.
So the temperature difference alone has been awesome since I've been out here. I got into biking a lot because of that. And I think I wouldn't have gotten into biking as much as I have out here.
Wait, are we talking about the internal combustion engine power?
No.
They don't do that in San Francisco.
No, they do. They definitely do.
They do. It's huge for motorcycling.
Oh, on 101. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Highway 101. It's world famous for motorcyclists, as is the Pacific Coast Highway, anyway, so do you bike uphill in San Francisco then?
Do you wear the skin high pants?
Well, you can't only bike downhill, can you?
I live in San Mateo, which is just south of SF, and it's about 15 minutes, 20 minutes south of SF. So there's actually, it's called the Bay Trail, the Bay Area Trail, Bay Bike Trail, I think it's called. And I bike the Bay. It's about a 12-mile ride from my apartment, up to the San Mateo Bridge there and back, six and six. And that's usually my trip.
Oh, that sounds nice.
It's beautiful. Yeah, biking alongside the Bay is really beautiful every day, especially when the sun's setting and stuff. It's gorgeous.
Wow. So are you in better shape now that you're in the Bay Area than you were when you were in Philly?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I'm from Scranton. I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
You're Scranton? Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Interesting tidbit there. Yes, the office. I know.
So, hey, last question here. What's the biggest trend you see in 2016 that you're excited about in marketing?
VR advertising by a landslide.
Right now, less than
1% of content creators are actually monetizing their VR apps or their VR content. And I think that is the next big land grab for advertising.
Wow. So is this like the Betamax versus VHS thing? Do you have to pick a platform right now? Are you focused on Oculus or?
It's going to be across all of them, right? So there's going to be an ad network or ad networks that will allow advertisers to advertise across 360 video, to advertise across Oculus or Samsung's or PlayStation's or any VR platform.
So like a virtual reality billboard?
A VR ad network, if you will.
So I feel like this is an entirely new podcast at this point.
I could get you guys somebody that's actually building one if you would like to have them on.
Oh, that'd be fun. It reminds me of Second Life. During that time period, I remember I created a Second Life account and went in and I found that there were a bunch of businesses that were already there that had built out crazy stuff to engage with people. It was really cool.
The cool thing about VR is that anything that is, you know, conceived as an advertisement in the real world could conceivably be an advertisement in a virtual world. So if Pepsi wants to advertise by having Coke cans on the table, or Pepsi, or, well, probably not Coke cans, Pepsi cans on the
Targets
table.
Targets for your, you know,
yeah, rusty ones.
Yeah. So, I mean, the ways that you can advertise are literally infinite. And I think that's what makes me so excited. It's going to empower storytellers that are advertisers to experiment and tell stories in a way that, you know, has never been done before. And it's really limitless when you think about it in terms of creativity.
Well, that sounds like fun right there. That just sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Why advertise in the real world when you can advertise in a fake one?
Well, the fun thing is going to be to have attribution from your VR campaigns.
That's the other thing, is that you can measure how often people are actually looking at something or interacting with something, or by their eye, like literally by where their head is moved with the headset.
That's much different than impressions on, let's say, web pages, for example, where you don't know.
Okay, or even auto-starting videos on a Facebook feed.
We're on a whole nother level right here.
Okay, wow. Josh's mind is blown, so I think we have to wind it up there.
We're gonna have to put it all, stuff it all back in there where it goes.
Are we talking about my mind or the episode?
That too. So, Andrew, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show.
Truly.
And obviously we'll send people to automateads.com to check that out. Where can they find you? Do you have a Twitter account? I'm sure you do.
Yes, I do. I am at TorbaHacks. TorbaHax.
All right, super. We'll post that along with more info about Automate Ads in the show notes for today's show. And I got to tell you, this has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for having me,
guys.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, Andrew.
All right, well, that was fun. I'm gonna check that out.
Check what out?
Automate Ads.
Yeah.
Not the Bay Area bike ride. I mean, that sounds like fun too, but I know I got my beautiful bike ride that I can do in Sarasota to Arbridge. So
I wonder what you'd look like in those tights.
No,
that's not even right. Right there.
I mean, come on.
Virtual reality advertising.
I know it. That one's. I love it.
Yeah, let's have the guy on. Let's find out who his guy is. Let's have him on. Let's talk virtual reality.
We'll have to have like a show that we dedicate to like futuristic Star Trek stuff,
right,
like that
cool.
doesn't exist yet.
Right.
Like this is the move towards the, what was the room called? Doggone it. Now I'm trying, it's a Star Trek room where they went in the next generation.
Hologram?
Holodeck. Yeah, thank you. Jeez. That was a scary moment there.
I need to brush up on my Star Trek.
Yeah.
Get used to those scary moments.
Oh, no, that's not even right. Well, this was a fun show. And
Episode 50.
So next week, hey, by the way, if you want to make a comment on today's show or check out the notes, it's growthedream.com/shows/050. That's the link that you can use to get to today's notes. And definitely check out Automate Ads and Torba Hacks on Twitter, Andrew Torba. Mm-hmm. But next week, we're doing our big one-year anniversary show. And so we're going to be using your favorite moments from the first year.
Kind of a best of.
That's right. So, hey, it's quite likely that you joined us somewhere midstream. Like, you probably have not heard all episodes.
So you need
to
go back and listen to all of them.
No. We're going to do that for you so you don't have to. We're going to pick some of the biggest moments out between, you know, episode one and episode 50. And then we'll give you kind of a little, you know, overview of some of the best moments and some of the biggest lessons we've learned. I've learned a lot from this show.
Oh, man, me too. Yeah.
And if you'd like to see the David Johnson in tights, let us know.
I don't wear those, so that's
GTV
not even going to happen. No.
On Twitter.
What do you think Photoshop is for?
Oh, jeez. Well, if that's the case, you can make me look decent in them. So at GTD Show.
What fun would that be?
We'll put a cat in your arms.
And bacon. We got
on your
have
head.
Bacon. Yeah.
A bacon hat.
All right. So we do want to hear from you. Tweet us at GTD Show. And Rod Thompson, veteran journalist and messaging guru. Mm. Glad to have you today, as always.
As always.
Can you imagine that? A bacon hat. How cool would that be? Just grease dripping.
Lady Gaga wore a meat suit, so I don't know why.
It was disturbing.
Yeah, it really was. Mm. Josh Muccio.
You can't find me on Twitter because you can't spell my last name.
The startup guy, Mooch. He's it's JOSHMUCCIO, if you're wondering. You can find him at Josh Muccio on Twitter.
I'm on Peach.
What's Peach?
Peach is that new social networking app that everybody loves to hate or hates.
Okay.
They love it.
You can't do this at the end of the show.
I know, but I had to mention it because it just came out and went crazy.
All right. We'll have to find out about that. And you can find me on Twitter if you wish at the David Johnson. It's been great having you here. And this has been a great show. I look forward to our one-year anniversary show next week.
Oh, yeah.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.